Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
We're talking again
about body swapping.
From two boys, two wives, and back again.
Welcome to the Swapcast podcast, the world's only podcast dedicated to body swap movies. I'm your host, Paul Mitzi. And with me we have...
I'm so used to going third. Brendan Levi.
And joining us once again, the lovely...
Hannah Dallas.
Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
In today's episode, we'll be breaking down the 2017 sci-fi thriller, In Control. It's all one word. Where four college students use a stolen machine that allows them to take over the bodies of those around them. But before we get into that, just a reminder that we absolutely love hearing from our listeners and we welcome film suggestions for future episodes. So please reach out to us on Twitter or Instagram, send us an email at theswapcastpodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to support our show, reviewing us is the best way possible. So to say thank you, if we reach 100 star ratings on iTunes and Spotify, we'll finally fulfill our fans' most common request to review Face Off.
Rush Hour 3. Oh, wait.
So welcome back, Hannah.
Thank you.
You weren't scared off by your first
foray into the swap universe. After the dismal audio quality, but yeah, put in maximum effort this time.
No, I thought it was good. It was like it sort of was a representation of the film's quality.
Yeah.
Your audio was actually better than the film.
Yeah.
That's such a good point. I just went, I'd like to commit on theme for whatever film.
Yeah. Well, I'd hate to know what the theme is for this one, but.
We'll find out.
So on to In Control. I watch a lot of movies of all different genres and budgets. And the same could just be said for the films I've watched for this podcast. We've covered pretty out there concepts, people swapping bodies constantly, challenging the viewer's perception of reality in a major way. But this is the first time I think I've genuinely struggled knowing what the fuck was going on in some pretty key moments.
That whole like opening line, I was just like, what Paul's trying to say is, I'm not dumb.
Well, I get it brings movies. Me
to my- I understand things.
I've grappled with high concepts before.
Well, it does. It brings me to my question. Am I an idiot? Or was this just bad filmmaking? Or possibly both of those things?
I'm not going to answer first because I might be an idiot as well. Hannah, can you tell us what this movie was about?
I was so confused. Like, I vaguely got the concept of these are university students. They're getting hooked up to this machine. They're able to inhabit other people's minds. It's really unclear how that came to be, when they're in someone else's body, what is happening in any of the characters' lives, who they are as people.
Yeah.
The final act was totally incomprehensible to me. Like, I really had to sit down for like half an hour and do some solid thinking.
I'll be honest, like, my phone did come out, like... in this film, and I was like, oh no, I missed something, didn't I? So I like watched a 12-minute like recap of this entire film on YouTube.
Someone was that with the AI voice?
With the AI voice. Did you watch the same
one? Yeah, I had to.
So no one actually took the time to like do a recap. They like did they got a robot to say it. And it did not. I was like, oh, cool. I didn't miss a beat. This movie
Like, I didn't even get, I know we'll get to it, but the peanut butter, like, the main character is allergic to peanut butter. So when she inhabits other people's bodies, like, she goes and eats peanut butter. I didn't realize that that was what was happening.
I got that.
Oh, okay. maybe I am just stupid.
But what does that mean for the ending? Wait. Let's not confuse our audience any further. Paul, can you just give us the 30-second plot summary?
Oh, fuck. Oh, shit. I don't know what to do. All right, I can try, and I'll give you my version of events of what I think happened in this film.
Brilliant.
Okay. So count me down, and we'll give it a go.
All right, ready, steady, go.
Okay, so it's about this girl. She's a university student, and then these other students ask her to come to this room where they all hook up to this machine that they said they stole from the university. And when you put the machine on, you think of someone, and then you can control the decisions of that person. And so they do it, but all they do is just like go to parties and stuff in other people's bodies. And then in the end, they start turning on each other, and then
you're out of time, buddy. Couldn't even get through them.
You got pretty close.
You fed like 25 seconds explaining how they like just changed bodies.
Yeah, it was a failure. But that's,
I think
you're
stalling. Like, Paul, have as much time as you like. Tell everyone what happens to this.
Okay, so this guy, he invites this girl to try this machine.
And tell everyone at home how they know each other and, like, why he would choose to, you know, let this person in on this very secretive, device.
Well, it's not explained until the end, and I think...
I think you're wrong there. I don't think it is explained at the end either.
Well, I think it kind of was-ish. I think the implication is he wasn't who he was.
Yeah.
He was actually being controlled by someone else.
And that person was?
That we don't know. So there's some bigger conspiracy.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who it was, because I was hoping someone else would feel
it. Oh, no.
Yeah, and like, so at the end, like the two people that introduced her to the machine, they kill the other two people, including her, including the main character. But then, and then they kill them. They're like, they leave their bodies, but kill their bodies at the same time. So then, but then she wakes up. She wasn't actually killed properly. Oh no, sorry, no. She was in another body when she got killed.
Yeah.
And the other body that she was in had a car accident in the moment she was killed because she lost control or whatever.
Yeah.
And then when she wakes up from the car accident, we see her live her life for a while, and then we realize, because she eats the peanut butter at the end, that she's actually now stuck in the other body.
Now, do you believe like she got amnesia and it's her in the other body, or that like two souls inhabit this one body now and like elements of her is seeping through in the end of it?
My interpretation was that the body is kind of existing as a host, but is occupied by the main character.
Yeah, because they made the implication, like, with the two evil people at the end, like, that the two bodies can be in there, like, fighting for control over each other. Very much like the film that Brendan and I have reviewed in the past, All of Me with Steve Martin, which was a much more entertaining version of that concept. It made no sense. But also, like, if this is, like, a, you know, evil corporation or whatever.
You said it's an evil corporation.
Or if it's anyone, really.
Yeah.
If it's anyone controlling other people and making them go and control other people, like, what's the end game? And what were they trying to achieve? Because all they were doing when they were doing these, like, controlling other people parties is, like, going to college parties
and so
drinking
much
and taking drugs.
Because I think one of my main issues is that there wasn't – so if they're viewing it as like this hedonistic vehicle, right, where you can like go and hook up and transport yourself into somebody else's body, you don't get the hangover the next day, you can take drugs, you can, you know, not abuse that body but use it for like partying pleasures. The partying didn't seem fun enough. I feel like there should have been a phase of the film where it was clear that like people were having the fucking time of their lives. You know, they're going to these excellent parties and like hooking up and
like playing board games. Oh, sorry.
Different parties, Brennan.
I guess so.
Might be going to different parties. But you didn't get that. It just seemed pretty lame. And
Oh, but didn't you think that song that they played at the party? All these drunk bitches. All these drunk bitches.
Oh, I didn't clock it. I'll have to go back. But then, yeah, so like it's taking a dive after that, right? Things are supposed to get dark, but I think it was already too dark. There wasn't enough of a contrast between the initial appeal of using that technology and then the darker side in the second half of the film. It was kind of overall.
Yeah, I know what
overall,
you mean. Like,
sorry.
It should have been that like flatliners where like they're flirting with all these things that they don't want to put their own bodies through. And, you know, putting themselves in these, you know, escalating dangerous situations. But it's not that. It's just like hanging out at like an 18-year-old's birthday party.
Yeah, but it felt weirdly sinister as well.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden it just escalates to like robbing someone for some reason. Like we didn't see like that character who like all of a sudden's like, hey, I'm gonna rob someone at knife point at a teller. Like,
yeah,
we didn't see him like have these like little bits of pieces of building that tension of him like, oh, is he gonna all of a sudden be set off and do something
but
too,
I think
go too far?
In those moments, the implication was in those moments he wasn't making that decision. It was like a body swap inception where he was taking over someone and someone was taking over him and making him rob. And then that's why at the end he was like freaking out
and this
about
is,
his own decisions.
I think this is the most poorly executed part of the film, that final layer that they introduce at the end, which is supposed to be this like aha moment, like, oh god, it runs so much deeper, they're being controlled by somebody else. It could have been this real Black Mirror-esque commentary, but there wasn't enough to latch onto. Like, well, who is it? The university? Is it like some corporation? Like, it felt like such a missed opportunity. Because I did like the idea of, well, how did they get that machine? Like, no one seems to remember. Like, obviously, that's concerning that's already obviously been planted for them. Is their data being used for something? Because they talked about the MRI scans and things.
Because, yeah, they were, like, it seemed like they were doing some sort of research on the device.
Yeah. Yeah.
By using, random.
And what they were saying students. About, this time, you know, she managed to keep her job a lot longer than the others, and they're obviously like running tests on these people, but not enough was made of it. And it wasn't taken anywhere. It was kind of just dumped on you right at the end in a very obtuse way. The whole thing seemed deliberately obtuse, and it thought it was cleverer than it was.
Yeah. Like the writer director obviously had a lot to say. Like there's a lot of setting up ideas by, you know, having a lecturer explain, you know, what a panopticon is, and then all these like discussions in like theory classes to be like, hey, this is what the movie's about, just in case you wanted to know, like, just listen to the lecturer talking right now, you know, kind of things.
I love that moment where when it's all being, I guess, quote unquote, revealed at the end, and it flashes back to a speech one of the characters made earlier about a prison experiment. And I think, you know, we're watching this speech again because it's supposed to be like, oh, now we're watching it in this context. It makes all these things make sense. But I was like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get what she's talking about. Like in relation to this plot, I don't get it.
Yeah, because once again, it's bringing up like the idea of a panopticon, that like people will act differently when they think they're being watched. But I don't think that's what swapping bodies is about. Like, you know what I mean?
It felt very strange for that to be the undergraduate essay that the film was trying to write. It's like, you actually, that's not what you're engaging with. You're engaging with like concepts of like self and the uniqueness of an individual's experience, and like there's so many other things that it's trying to talk about. But yeah, it kept coming up to like Foucault's panopticon, because she's a sociology student, and she, now that she's writing from personal experience, her essays are getting better marks.
Yeah, that was the thing that Jeremy had said, is because she swapped bodies with you know, some little like teeny bopper, she all of a sudden can get A's in her class. I'm like, Are you even attending class? Are you doing study? It seems like you're spending 8 hours a night, like, living out some other person's life. Like, how are you doing better in your studies?
And all the swapping was just inane. Like, nobody did anything interesting when they swapped into these other bodies. Like, literally, there's scenes where she swaps and just sits on the couch and eats ice cream while watching TV. And, like, the film almost makes it seem like it's, like, this dark, edgy moment. And so I don't get what you're trying to say. Like, the film's tone is just so... like, I guess ambient is the way I
could describe it.
Like taking an ambient?
taking an ambient, yeah. It's like it's all these people whispering calmly to each other in cavernous, empty rooms.
As piano plays. Like,
ambient piano plays in the background. It's like, what tone were they going for?
And there was a moment where they go into a room and someone's playing the piano. I'm like, oh, finally, they found them. Can they shut them the fuck up?
There was an air of pretentiousness, wasn't there? Where it's like, oh, we're this very, the aesthetic is almost like ex machina, that clean kind of, brutalist architecture with, you know, very like overcast weather and everything's
and the pace being like super dragged, like, which is like, it makes no sense because this film goes for 77 minutes, but like
it felt so long. So I was checking the time like every 10 minutes, like thinking, oh, that must have been another hour.
I watched it in like 20 minute chunks.
Yeah, I had to watch it in two sittings. I couldn't do it in one.
Yeah.
But it really does feel literally double its length at minimum.
But you can like, you can totally feel the sort of inspirations, like, you know, the device is very like primer, like it's this like obelisk of like, you know, oh, it's technology and it's weird and it's, you know, foreign. And
I actually
then,
do like the design like of the device though. The design of the device is quite beautiful and unobtrusive.
Yeah, but it just feels so odd that you can literally like just jump bodies by like sticking a diode to your head and just sitting in a chair, you know, like.
Yeah.
And it really wasn't clear how they were like choosing the people they swap into, because it seemed like it was a deliberate choice, but how are they connecting to those specific people? Because like to begin with, the people she's going in, it doesn't seem like she even had any connection with those people at all whatsoever. And suddenly she's just like swapping into them. So like, is it that you think of someone and then you suddenly can go into their brain? Like, how does that work?
Well, they do try and explain it at the start, don't they? You know, you have to visualize the person. They have to be close. Like, there's all these, like, it's very clunky
that
when they do the exposition of the rules.
We're irrelevant because we don't know who these people are that they're jumping into bodies of. And
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a whole,
or how
like,
they
long,
pick their victims and, yeah.
Or why? Or, yeah. This whole long exposition scene where they're on that balcony above the skyline of the city. Do you remember that? Where they're.
Yeah.
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 Where just all I could hear was, like, the the audio of, like, a cityscape and barely hear their voices. Yeah.
It felt like it was
so
that,
whispery.
It's like, you're explaining the rules. Can you go inside, please?
Even Inception had to do that, you know, to talk about, sit the character down and the initial deep dive on how the tech works. But yeah, it went for so long. It didn't make sense, like the rules of it. And then they didn't really seem to follow it from there on anyway.
I was too busy going, like, what is, like, who are these people?
Yeah.
Like, this guy and this girl, they seem to have this, like, will they, won't they sort of chemistry. But I don't know, like, they don't go to the same class. So I know they didn't meet that way. They seem to be, like, completely disconnected other than the fact that he goes to the coffee shop, but he's sitting down and reviewing her homework. Like,
yeah.
Like, the film finally sets out something interesting, that she starts swapping into his girlfriend without his knowledge.
Mm. Yes. And that
does nothing with it.
The ethics of that were actually interesting, but it didn't. You're right. Yeah. It didn't do anything with that except like.
And where's the scene of her going to her body and then fucking him?
Yeah.
Like, that's what we want. It's going to create drama. It's going to create drama. It's going to be sexy. It's going to bring something.
And maybe just like a little more of her feeling conflicted about, like, she's like a sociology like student. I expected her to be more like, is this cool that we're like going into people's bodies and consuming drugs and having like sex with people? Like, this doesn't seem, you know, to be
cool. And he does like this speech kind of justifying it. And you're like,
that's a bunch of horseshit.
None of your justifications are actually valid at all. Yeah. There's nothing morally right about what you're doing. Nothing.
And this arbitrary rule that they all seem to follow of like, oh, no, we won't occupy each other's bodies. Like, we're not going to do that. But you're doing all this other, like, incredibly unethical things within other people's bodies. Yeah, that didn't make sense to me either.
But then I think the film had that get out of jail free card at the end where you, like, you can justify it by saying, oh, at that point, they weren't actually controlling their own decisions. Maybe.
Yes.
Possibly.
But it kind of felt like instead of that being a revelation, it kind of felt like a little bit of a cop-out to just throw that away at the end of the film. Like, oh, and by the way, like, maybe nothing they did was within their control at all. Free will. Blah. I just kind of smoke screen out of there.
A slave to, social conditioning and blah, blah, blah. Like, there's a lot of things I know, like, you knew what they were trying to do. Like, the girl and her home life, her mother just not having it together. Like,
I thought she was quite good, that woman who played the mother.
Yeah, but then, like, the end of that storyline, I guess, was she then swapped into her mum to get her life back together.
Yes, yeah.
But then it never explored the consequences of that.
That was only seen as a good thing, right? Like, she got a reception job at the hospital and living her best life.
That's all you have to do. Go outside.
Just like
jobs are just.
Just put your shoes on and go get a job.
Yeah.
Cool.
But yeah, like her storyline was supposed to be like she was this tight-laced girl who like always had to like look after her mother and never got to like let loose. And, you know, her, you know, revelation of this was supposed to be sort of like being able to experience that and then, you know, breaking those ties with her mother, like being responsible for her or whatever. But yeah, none of that really pays off or is of any consequence and is just left because they shoot her.
Do you know what's like fucking frustrating is that this film, and I say this a lot on this show, but this film really does have the building blocks for a great film.
Yeah.
Like the concept is good and I feel like any of us three could sit down and write a better script than what they did. I'm confident that we could.
It might be
generic, but there's the very obvious building blocks here of what you could do with this story.
And pick one thing. If you're going to pick, say, like free will, so you're going to question people, the nature of free will through taking over people's bodies and making decisions for them. That is so rich. Like, just deep dive into that. Or are you going to question the ethics of occupying somebody else's brain? Or are you going to
the whole like panopticon, like, you know, what people do when nobody's watching kind of thing, like they could have totally done that.
Yes, actually investigated that. Yeah.
Just individually going into bodies and like doing things that were, because they were always together. So they were always like sort of limited in what they would do because people were watching. Like it just.
Yeah. And so how about for the people that they swap into? How about, they swap into that person, make them do awful things, swap out, and then we see that person dealing
in real life, with they that. Like cross paths and see that it's like fucked them up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, and also, like, let's see the consequences. Let's see how that affected that person's life. Like, that's interesting.
Yeah. Cause they're like, oh, these people are rich. So, you know, like, you could have had a girl have, you know, a one night stand and that, you know, obviously affects her, you know, social standing in her group, or, you know, she takes drugs and then, you know, she get ODs and always dies. And then like that, like, you know, causes a rift in her family, or, you know, you could have multiple things happen, but.
Yeah. I think the main thing it was trying to show us that it was detrimental to was her ability to hold down a job or go to school, but any of the actual like psychological.
Well, that's why they killed her, right?
Yeah.
Because they were like, oh, she held out. Like, I felt like they were studying the addiction of this device.
Yes.
Because, like, as soon as she quit her job, they're like, all right, you know, put a gun to her head, shoot her. and they even like incepted, I'm going to use the word incepted because people will understand what I mean, incepted the
great
her boss and gave her a raise and shit, because there's no like hospitality boss is like, you're doing a great job, I'm giving you a raise. Doesn't happen. No such thing.
Yeah. I hated the cafe storyline. I really did. Every time we're in the cafe, I'm cafe. Like, oh, fuck's sake. Yeah.
But they're constantly cleaning for nobody.
It's like Fleabag cafe, just completely empty.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And the cups were empty. My pet hate empty cups of Hollywood. Every time they put a coffee down on the counter or like a chai, whatever, just that hollow tap on the counter.
Yeah, like empty is a good describer for this film because it really, yeah, probably the most populated scene of the film is when she's in the lecture theater, and even that's like 10 people. But like, surely, like, this feels like, well, I thought it was a student film.
It does have that feel to it, doesn't it?
But then when I looked at the IMDb, like, these are people that have been in stuff. So, like, these are all like, I'm pretty sure this is Canadian. And these are all people that pop up in all the like CW shows that are shot in Canada, and like, so these are people with careers. So surely they didn't all stoop down for this awful student film. Like, but fucking get some kids from the university in the film department and put them as extras. Like,
yeah, fill anyone. The lecture theater out. It felt very.
I don't know. That felt bizarre. Very accurate of my experience. Is that. Nobody actually attended lectures and they all watched it online.
But even like at one point they take over the body specifically so they can go to a party, and then they go to the party and it's one guy smoking a bong.
That's what I mean. The parties are shit. They're no fun.
And how did they know about that party?
Well, that,
if it was
that
one
seems
guy
like...
smoking a bong.
Terrible. Yeah. Do you know what, though? A lot of the locations were very beautiful. I will say that much. Like, the buildings were really beautiful. All the... Why did they go to the woods? Not really sure why they went to the woods, but they were there, and that was lovely.
And they wanted the drone shot.
That is my new pet hate.
Drone shots?
Unnecessary drone shots in low-budget movies is my new pet hate. The sign of a bad low-budget director is drone shots.
They're like, hey, let's just... zoom the fuck out of here.
And who comes and picks their boyfriend up from the woods? Like, that didn't track, did it?
Who, like, invites a girl that they're not romantically connected to into the woods to just hang on the side of a mountain?
And then the girlfriend
And the girlfriend
no,
picks
like,
her up, yeah.
Yeah, and she's, like, not
totally cool about
all.
It, yeah.
And so the implication is that at some point, someone has inhabited her body and convinced her, or like established a relationship with Mark.
This person who's in Mark's body, who we don't know who it is. I assume
for some reason.
Some
so why does
50-year-old old man? Yeah.
And why does he want a relationship with Marissa? I don't know. And why does she continue?
Like, this guy's on the clock, right? Whoever this mysterious man taking over this guy's body is, he's doing a job, but they like. Took, you know, 20 minutes to infantilize this girl with him, and yeah.
Do we also think that, like, you can just hop into someone's body and, like, drive them over to a person and make them make out with them or whatever, and then hop out of their body again, and they're just going to continue to be interested in someone that they weren't interested in before?
Well, I guess,
like, isn't it a conscious choice to-
I guess if you thought you made those decisions, you'd kind of keep rolling with it, right?
Which Maybe. Is what they tried to posit, is that when people did things that they didn't want to, they just sort of justified in their head. Yeah, maybe I did want to.
Yeah. Because
I think we've all had those. I think we've all had those moments where we've started to date someone, and then we're like, "Why the fuck did I start this?" And then you kind of have to keep going for it for a little bit just to make sure that you weren't completely wrong.
Yeah, right.
And then you always realize you were. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. I know it wouldn't be Brendan because he's dated like one person, but
not relatable to Brendan. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know.
I kind of get it.
I get what you're saying about the justifying it to yourself and the brain wanting to make sense of it, the gap, and that they did try and explain that. But it, yeah, I think in reality for me, that that wouldn't track. Personal experience, I'd be like, what am I doing? I don't think I'm into this person. It'd be pretty confronting.
So if you were to make like your ultimate version of this film, what kind of, what would be your vision for it? Would you want it to be like super sexy or like very like dark and broody or leaning more into the science fiction? Or
I think it has to be sexier and more fun at the start. And I don't think this is necessarily a film. I think it's just a Black Mirror episode. Like it's an hour of television or 50 minutes of television.
I think it's a film. It's called Time Passes, the movie. No, I would, I feel like if you're going down that route of like people letting go of inhibitions, like it's got to be much more visceral and, you know, sexual in that matter. Like, so much of it was just so far away from these people. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like, I don't know.
Yeah, bring that human pleasure element back into it, because I think that surely has to be why people want to jump into other people's bodies.
Because the film does flirt with it. We get a few titty shots and like sex scenes, but they have no context.
And they're a bit yeah, like, they felt very gratuitous. So they were just something.
Yeah, they weren't, the vibe wasn't sexy. The vibe was like icky.
Sad boobs.
Yeah. And I think, I guess my final question about this film is, In Control is the name of the film. In Control isn't a word. There's no space in between in and control. It's In Control. Why?
Sounds more sci-fi? I don't know.
Like, yeah, is there like a sort of like a database where if someone's already got the name of a film, you can't, you know, like a license plate? Like you gotta,
yeah.
If you want to get a custom name for your film, you gotta like come up with a new one.
Is there a film called In Control? Or there's a song called In Control by Hillsong Worship, so that's fun.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, exactly. Well done, Paul.
See, you found the one thing I'd want to watch less than this.
No way. What a setting for this film, right, would be like inside like a Hillsong or something like
that. Yes. Yeah. Actually, like within a religious cult, like that could be a very interesting setting.
Yeah, but no, I'm thinking like, you know, you're putting like you're controlling the Hillsong people and making them do all like hedonistic as fuck things.
So like what's going on in Hillsong?
Yeah.
It's just explaining it.
They're doing it in person, like in front of other people. Okay, so here's what I'm positing.
Mm.
We remake this film, call it In Control, so we don't get sued, and make it good.
Hey, why haven't you found some girl? She does keep looking at you.
Right here?
Yeah, you know what I mean? The two.
No, I've got someone.
So you heard what we thought of the movie, but how attractive did we find the cast? Now it's time for Hot or Not. Take it away, me. Are they a toot or a boot? Are they ugly or cute? Tell me if they're hot or not.
Ding, ding.
Everybody's beautiful
in their own way. Just gonna ignore everyone else's voices and just push through. Like you can't start to listen to each other.
There's so much lag today. It was impossible. All right. I just have to say, like, outright, this is a very attractive cast.
Yes.
But attractive in that, like, Target catalog kind of way. It's like the most generic pretty people you can find. And I think maybe because the characters literally had no personalities, that there was nothing to latch on to. But on a visual level, yes, they were quite attractive. So I don't think there's going to be much argument here. But Anna Savkik as Samantha, our main character.
Great hair. Excellent hair.
Really?
I did.
Yeah, I think so. Very
I'm
clean.
Just like, yeah, all right.
I just think I hated her glasses acting. Mm. You know when someone in a movie wears glasses and you can tell that they don't in real life and they fiddle with them in ways that us glasses wearers never do. That was
you see through it
on display.
The glasses were wearing her, weren't they?
I do feel like we missed this part of it, but am I going? I don't know if I'm going too far back. But I think just in general, the acting, or maybe it was the directing of this film, sort of failed this as well, because like just all of it. This is too far. I've gone too far, because I was going to say, like, I think this film would have been better served if, when they were in other people's bodies, I could recognize who was in whose body by a bit more of a change in personality. And when a second person, like when there's two people, you know, sort of that I should be able to like tell, you know.
Yeah, there were no cues were there for like entry and exit and who was
or
who.
Or just subtle differences that, you know, sort of, you know.
Yeah.
Can't, anyway, sorry. That's we're supposed to be objectifying people right now. I apologize.
Yeah.
How dare you, Brendan? How dare you interrogate the film?
Sarah Troyer as Marissa, like the girl that she goes into.
The cheerleader.
Yeah. Do we ever even see her do any cheerleading?
No. We're just told that,
she was
is
a
one.
Cheerleader?
They called her that once. She was beautiful though.
Yeah,
she
I reckon was, she's my number one. She's right up there.
Yeah. Very pretty girl. But again, nothing to latch onto at all.
There's even that bit where she's in front of them. Well, she's not in front of the mirror. The woman who's like inhabiting her brain, when she's in front of the mirror, like touching her body, thoroughly yeah. unsexy. Could have been a very sexy, like,
yeah, yeah,
female body moment, but no.
It was like a medical examination.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was looking at her titties and she looked upset. Like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, she's the blandest.
All right, Rory J. Saper as Victor. Now, I have to say he was probably the hottest for me, purely because he had an accent, which made him different than everyone else. But I don't know, he had nice hair as well, actually. I thought he was hot.
Yeah, I'm not going to throw in a not vote. Not really my jam, but he's not hot.
Mm.
Like, I mean, I think he was a scum person. Like, we don't know for sure because it could have been someone else making those decisions for him and he was just trapped. Like, he did some shitty things.
We'll keep getting told that he was a shitty person. Actually, I'm looking at, I've just Googled him and to be honest, no, not hot.
Oh, really?
Thin lips. Too thin.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at the pictures now. I get what you mean.
Mm.
I'm still giving him a hot.
All right.
Brendan?
I don't like you said about like the target, like these people are very like attractive in like a real sense, but they've also been done up like they're about to shoot a Target catalog, so
yeah. And
he's fine even
to the point of their clothes looking like Target clothes.
Yeah.
It's sure. All that kind of like very plain hoodies and singlets and like nothing of interest.
Yeah,
it's like they went out of their way.
Like, yeah, you go to a party, you expect like maybe they like glitz it up a bit, but everyone there look like, you know, oh, we're just chopping off the rack, the rich person like party. Yeah.
Yeah, they're supposed to be rich people and no one's yeah. doing anything nice.
No, yeah. There wasn't enough disparity between rich and poor as well. I'm like, oh, okay, these people are rich, apparently.
Mm. All right, finally, Levi Meaden as Mark.
No.
Really?
I was just waiting. I was saving my no. Cause,
do you know
I
what
honestly don't see what you do.
The vibe I get from this actor is that he could have like been in the Hunger Games or something. He's got that kind of.
Yeah, he could have played a corpse in the Hunger Games.
Or like a villain yeah. from like one of the districts
the
or
sea,
something.
Yeah.
My kryptonite is generically.
Patchy facial hair?
No, generically good looking blonde guys. Like, if you're a like generic blonde white man, for some reason, it gets me.
I feel like you watched too much Home and Away as a kid or something.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, he does have that look to him. I get that he's bland as fuck, but. Jesus Christ. Yeah, he's hot.
He's fine. I feel like he'd do well in another film.
Yeah. And, you know, to these people's credits, they've got plenty of other credits.
Credit to their credits.
I would be interested to see these people in other films just to see what they could offer with direction and a script.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I can't do that again. It's evil. I'm never touching that thing again. I want to stay friends, though. I trust you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Now it's time for Opinion Swap, where we find some entertaining reviews of In Control from across the interweb. The first one's from Anton Battelle on Letterboxd, and he says, "At its heart, In Control is the story of a young woman's longing to be someone else and her slow discovery of self, and as such, it dramatizes the adolescent drive to try out new things, no matter how addictive or destructive they may prove. It is also, of course, an allegory of the digital lives that we are all now living, staring into the reflective surfaces of our computer, reinventing ourselves as online anonyms, impersonations, and avatars, and unable to shed the suspicion that we may just be a powerless puppet in the system where control is illusionary. Ambiguous and elliptical, In Control is a speculative poem, wherein postmodern identity becomes its own special form of prison."
Poetry, wow.
Yeah.
So this is the director on his alt account, which is, you know, ironic because the very thing he's talking about. This is him pretending to be someone who liked his film, and I understand.
Are you allowed to make up what happened in a film for a review? You just allowed to, like, make up things? Because, like, a lot of that stuff was not within the text. He's just straight up, like, improvising.
It's a lot of the stuff that should have been explored in this plot.
I agree. Yeah. Like, it could have been there. That would have been great if it was, but unfortunately, they didn't go there.
But how amazing, you know, that somebody has that ability to watch the film and get all of that out of it. Like, kudos to Anton. All right. So the next one's from Harry, who gives it 0.5 star. And he says, "Whatever this is trying to be, it is not very good at it. Dull both in writing and performances, in addition to the visual style, which is to the level of a TV advertisement. This film is not worth trying to sit through, despite its short runtime."
What's that guy's name?
That sounds Harry.
Harry and I could be friends, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's summed it up very, very succinctly.
Is that how you make a lot of friends? Like, based on what they like and don't like?
Oh, for sure. You know, just got to, like, bond over hatred mostly.
Yeah. Finally, we have one from Abra Dalamanhima on IMDb. They must have run out of good usernames at that point. 1 out of 10, a waste of time. A creepy ending. I didn't really get it. Why does she committed the accident?
Wasn't
Why
she texting?
She committed the accident.
I think that's one of the questions for the age.
Why did she
was it because she got shot while she was driving?
Yeah.
And then she slingshot back, because that's another thing that they sort of preface. Maybe she drove far away enough that when she died, she didn't slingshot back.
But also, like,
because this is all magic, right?
It's all magic.
How did the production afford a car flipping over is what I want to know.
Didn't you see that back window? That car was stripped. Like, the inside of it was already, like, totaled.
Some real Mythbusters shit.
Still, that's got to cost money. Like, you work in the industry, Brendan.
I'll tell you what that cost. That cost finding a friend who has a plot of land that you can just do whatever the fuck you want on.
Really?
Yeah, but surely you need, like, a stunt driver. Like,
you would.
So that costs money.
Yeah, yeah. If you hire a stunt driver, it's going to cost you money. If you got a friend with a paddock and they
You know, I think I've seen you around campus before.
Oh, you got a colony.
I used to. Wasn't really for me. Went for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, I get that.
Let's get to tenuous recommendations, where we each recommend a piece of media that's linked to today's movie in some way. And a reminder, if you ever want to see a list of all the recommendations we have made on the show, head over to our Letterboxd page, which is linked on our website. So I'll get us started. My connection is movies set at university. So I'm going to choose a 2014 drama called The Riot Club.
Oh, haven't heard of it.
Have you guys seen this?
No.
No, not at all.
So it's set in Oxford University in London, and it centers around the elite of Oxford, the legacy students whose parents founded Oxford University, and they're incredibly wealthy and they can do whatever they want. And they've set up this little secret society called the Riot Club. And every year, a bunch of them, and they're all men, go to this pub where they have like a night of hedonism. And so
with each other?
Well, not in that sense. So they all go to this pub, and it's set mostly during the one night, and things escalate, and the most privileged of the people do some despicable things that cross a line, and then they have to deal with the consequences of that. So it's a really entertaining film, amazing cast, full of like every like good looking British romantic lead in a drama that you've seen in the last 10 years. They're all in this film. Also stars Ollie Alexander, who's the lead singer of Years and Years and was the main character in It's a Sin.
Cool. Great.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a really interesting look at privilege and wealth and power dynamics and what the rich can get away with. And it's also got some pretty good eye candy. So the Riot
Club. Win-win. Love it.
Hannah, what's yours?
I think this one is pretty well known, and you may have even spoken about it on the show, I'm not sure. But the San Junipero episode of Black Mirror is my connection that I made while I was watching it. I think partly because the film felt like it should have been a Black Mirror episode, and that was partly what it was trying to deal with, like the dark side of tech and the ethical ambiguity of playing around with that sort of thing. But San Junipero is season 3, episode 4 of Black Mirror, and it's the premise is it's set at a beach town resort, which is a simulated reality. Basically, like when people in the future are elderly, instead of going to an elderly people's home, they can link up to a simulated reality where they can live in the youthful version of themselves and, live out beautiful romances. it's a really lovely episode, full of heart and a beautiful queer lesbian storyline. It just gets me every single time. I think it's a perfect episode of television. It's amazing.
Do you also connect to it? Because I don't know if anyone else has ever mentioned this, but you look a lot like Mackenzie Davis, the main character.
Now Mackenzie Davis. Do a comparison.
I have never heard that. No. So she's I know.
You're a Terminator.
Yeah, she was one of the Terminators.
It's a pretty good comparison.
She's got like blonde hair now, though. Hey. Canadian actress.
Wow, actually, looking at this photo, I totally see what you mean. Yeah.
Like, you could be sisters.
Oh, wow. Not why I connected to it, but I'll take it. Thank you so much.
But yeah, I agree.
It is a bit of a body swappy kind of thing, isn't it?
And definitely an age swap. We've done a few. And it's a lot more hopeful than the usual tone of that show. Very bleak.
Yeah, it's less less dark.
Great choice. Brendan, what's yours?
I was gonna do a couple. So I wanted to do a couple of books that came to mind while watching this that I was thinking about, because this movie failed to sort of like grasp the concepts.
Yeah.
So there's a It's like a short essay called Two Concepts of Liberty, which is written by Isaiah Berlin. It's really, I really think it's a really cool read. It's just about the basic idea of like the freedom from something and the freedom to do something. And I think that essentially was the message that this movie was trying to like unravel, was the idea of like, yeah, basically the idea that there's two ideas of liberty, the idea of the freedom from things like tyranny, and then so people stopping you from doing things, and the freedom to do things. The other one I was going to suggest was Free Will by Sam Harris, which is another really short read, and it's just about thinking through like how much actual choice we actually have, like the idea of, you know, I don't choose to have a piece of toast, like, you know, I don't choose to feel like a piece of toast, or I don't choose to, you know, be interested in karate all of a sudden. It's a basically it poses the idea that, you know, choice is an illusion and that everything's sort of deterministic. But, you know, for some people that could be really depressing, and in other ways it could be sort of a relief that maybe you're not so much in control of all the fucked up things that you are, you know. Anyway, it's a interesting read of the subject in a very easy to digest form.
So do you have to remind yourself that every time you're watching a body swap movie for this podcast?
That I don't, yeah.
That you have no control over the situation. Oh, no.
So yeah. And then I thought I had a film in mind, but maybe I didn't.
No, you've just given our listeners homework. Good work.
Just a little bit of light reading.
Just my recommendation.
The Zero Theorem. That's what it was. Terry Gilliam's the Zero Theorem.
I've never seen it.
Never seen it?
No.
I'm just making sure I named it right. Yeah, The Zero Theorem. It's got that guy from the Bastards film.
Yeah.
Christopher Waltz.
Christoph Waltz,
sorry. And it's about this guy who has been given the task to by the company he works for to prove that life is meaningless. He's like trying to figure out this theorem to prove that, like, yeah, basically that we're not in control of anything, and that, yeah, everything is binary, like the idea that there's a calculation to the universe, and that, yeah, everything's deterministic and stuff, and so we're not moral agents of, you know, control of our own destinies and stuff. So yeah, another thing that sort of I felt like delved into these ideas as well.
Do you know what though, Brendan? Like, I feel like that sounds like a good film because it picked one thing and interrogated it, or just, yeah.
And if you've seen Terry Gilliam stuff, like, it has that same like
visual
feast to it.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
So a really fun watch if you want to look at a depressing.
If you like sci-fi.
Existential crisis.
Existential sci-fi. Great rec. Yeah.
What if you do something strange? Something they would never do?
Try to push it sometime. See what happens. Just don't do anything to it, a character. Otherwise, things can get a little weird.
All right. So if you head over to our website, you'll see that each of us has ranked every body swap film we have reviewed on the podcast. So my question is, where are we going to put In Control on our lists? So Hannah, you've got a very short list.
Yeah.
This, I mean, and Love on a Leash.
This is a no-brainer. It is going above Love on a Leash, although I think I enjoyed Love on a Leash more. But we're not it's quality, isn't it? We're just going,
well, not necessarily. I rank by enjoyment.
Oh, okay.
More,
well,
than quality.
In which case, Love on a Leash is going higher than In Control.
Yeah, I would watch Love on a Leash like 10 times over before
this one again.
Yeah, yeah. We're having a movie night this
weekend. Swaps more in Love on a Leash. Like, I could tell it was a dog man more than I could.
That's very true. Like, it did a better job.
Yeah,
of something.
It did.
Who would have thunk?
Who'd have thunk it?
All right. So looking at my list, where the fuck am I going to put this? I didn't enjoy watching it. It was boring. So I think it has to be towards the bottom with all the other boring films. I think I'm going to put it in between The Cobbler and Dream a Little Dream. So that's like fifth from the bottom. I really didn't like this movie.
For some reason, my eye stopped at Birth, and I'm just trying to figure out, is it above or below Birth?
Birth is clearly a better film
I feel like I get similar feelings of the way it's shot and stuff as well. Do you?
No way! Birth was so well made. This is actually craziness.
I'm going to put it beneath Birth and
good
above The Christmas Swap. Oh. Actually, it's dropping one more. The Christmas Swap and Fallen. There we go.
What is The Christmas Swap? That sounds like
I can't remember which one was.
The Christmas Swap is the one with is that the... No, so, I have to make sure.
The problem is we've watched like... Christmas. We've watched the Christmas Swap, and we've watched The Christmas Switch.
I've seen The Christmas Switch,
and we've also watched Christmas Switch. There's The Christmas Switch, where there's Christmas Switch,
okay.
This Christmas Swap, and then Christmas.
The Christmas Swap. The Christmas Swap was the one with
the two brothers,
and it's like a straight drama.
Yeah, it's like a lot of the film is about like a woman with dementia.
Oh,
like,
God, okay.
Yeah. It's like a Christmas film, and then you end up just spending the room.
The genre on IMDb does say comedy fantasy, but
it does. Yeah, a holiday wish becomes a magical Christmas switch in TV One's original movie. Okay,
but yeah, it's mostly about a woman with Alzheimer's. It's so fucking depressing.
Oh God. Okay, give it a miss. Give it a miss.
Yeah.
I haven't seen A Christmas Switch. I've just realized I was looking that up as well. Anyway, that's for another time, probably during the Christmas season.
Whole bunch to watch for Christmas.
Don't. Please don't. If you have any self-preservation, do not.
Now, The Christmas Tray does star Alec Baldwin. No, not Alec Baldwin. His brother.
William Baldwin.
Yeah.
One of the Baldwins.
And Denise Richards.
Oh.
And Tom Arnold.
Did you say Christmas Truce or Christmas
it's
Trade?
It's a star-studded event.
Trade.
Oh.
That was Trade,
Christmas
right?
Trade.
That was the father-son.
Is there one called A Christmas Trade?
No, there's only The Christmas Trade. It's so fucking confusing. It's more confusing than this fucking movie
I wonder if there's
just
one
watched.
Just called Christmas Trade.
Christmas Trade.
In control.
Well, really my main takeaway is I'm relieved that I'm not an idiot.
Yes.
And it wasn't just me that this film is borderline incomprehensible. So,
yay. So, next episode. In honor of the Super Mario Brothers movie earning the highest grossing opening for an animated film of all time with $377 million worldwide, we'll be doing our very first Italian body swap.
Oh, molto bene.
Wife and a husband. Where after 10 years of marriage, Andreas and Sophia are thinking about a divorce, but after a failed science experiment, find themselves in each other's bodies. Mamma mia! Should I do the whole episode?
Yeah, please do.
Is that how you do Italian? Is like Mamma mia like a full stop in Italian?
It is when every,
you're more like an exclamation mark.
Our very first Italian body swap. Are we excited?
Super excited. I didn't even know that was a genre.
Oh, Dallas is coming back? Sick.
Oh, if she wants, she can.
She seems more excited than me.
I'll be listening.
Maybe I can find an Italian to come on the episode.
Ooh.
Do you know any? All right. So, that should be interesting. But until next time, don't be a piece of shit on the ground, TPW, and review us on iTunes or Spotify. And I was Paul Mitzi.
I was Brendan Levi.
And I was Hannah Dallas.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
The Swellcast podcast is recorded in Adelaide, Australia. It's hosted by Paul Mitzi and edited by Brendan Levi and Paul Mitzi. Our theme song was written and performed by John Marco of Too Creative, featuring Lucy Thomas, and recorded at Browntown Studios. Our music bumpers were created by Reggie Parker. Contact him on parkerregmusic@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.